Wednesday, March 1st, 2023. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. Hope you, your family, your friends, everyone in your world is staying strong and healthy right now. And hey, you're halfway through the week, a couple more days, you're on to another weekend. And you know, if you are listening to this show today and you are not in my home state of Colorado, first off, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Secondly, you might have the idea in mind when I say March 1st, you might think to yourself, hey, it's March. Winter is over. March is like, you know, getting to spring. We're headed towards spring. We're coming out of winter. The dreaded cold winter is almost over. Not here, it isn't. In fact, you might not realize this, but the month of March is our heaviest snow month here in colorful Colorado. So far, and this has been a rough winter, I won't lie. So far in the first 2 months of the year, here in Denver, we have had about 20 inches of snow already, just in January and February alone. On average, for the month of March, we usually get right around 12 to 14 inches. So we're going to be close to that just in the next month alone. If things hold the form, we are in for much, much more snow in the month of March. Now, again, I've told you before, I'm not complaining about it. I'm bragging about it. We live here in Colorado for a reason. We like it here. But I know that some people don't like the snow. Let me provide some encouragement to those people. Because like I said, today is March 1st. And here in Colorado, at least, March can bring snow. I don't know where you're listening at, but you may still have some cold days ahead of you. But remember, March does bring some good things. March brings St. Patrick's Day. The day, I might add, that cultural appropriation is not only okay, it is actually encouraged. Hey, St. Patty's, it's always a fun time. We know that some spring training is opening in Major League Baseball. If you're a baseball fan, March brings that to you. And then we get another one of those wonderful times of the year. Because, hey, March Madness is coming, and it is coming quickly. I absolutely love March Madness. And the buildup to it, right before it, is actually great too. We get a lot of those rivalry matchups coming down the stretch. We're going to get those Duke versus Carolina kind of matchups. Those are always super fun. And then we get into the conference tournaments that are going to determine whether or not you make the big dance. Hey, March is truly a wonderful time of the year in sports. I know the weather might not be exactly what you want, depending on what you're hoping for. But make no mistake, March is still a very good time of year in the world of sports. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, be sure you are stopping by DailyDoseSports.com because we have new articles going up there for you every single week. You might have saw this week, talked a little bit about the Broncos, some of the things that are going on with their new head coach, Sean Payton. There are actually some people here in Denver grumbling a little bit about some of the moves that Sean Payton is making. I would encourage you to stop by DailyDoseSports.com and check those things out. But, you know, Young Jimmy will also drop a new article on Thursdays. We have links to the podcast. We have links to the videos. And we have links to the Daily Dose gear. If you're on the market for a new t-shirt, a sweatshirt, a hoodie, in whatever color that you can pretty much imagine, be sure you stop by DailyDoseSports.com and find links to the Daily Dose gear that is over there. Stop by DailyDoseSports.com every single week. You will not be disappointed. Hey, today on the show, we are going to begin to get ready for March Madness a little bit more. And we're also going to let you know some dates to mark on your calendar for the NFL. You might not realize this, but March is also a very busy month in the NFL, even though that kind of sounds crazy. We just finished. The Super Bowl just ended. Never fear, my friends. The NFL manages to stay in the news year-round. And you will see that today on the Daily Dose. Plus, we will have a Daily Dose top five for you today. You'd never want to miss that. But first, we have a lot of sports news to cover, and we're going to start off in the NFL. where I want to talk a little bit about the San Francisco 49ers. Hey, they've got a few off-season issues that they kind of have to sort out first. But then we're all kind of looking at the Niners like, hey, they are going to be loaded next year. Because quite simply, they've got a ton of talent all over the field. The only thing that they really have to sort out is they've got too many quarterbacks on their roster. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo is set to become a free agent. But don't forget, their original starting quarterback, Trey Lance, should also be back this year. And then they have third-string quarterback Brock Purdy, but he's coming off that elbow injury that he suffered back in the NFC Championship game. So the Niners have a loaded roster. They just got to make some decisions as far as their quarterback. They probably, like I said, have too many quarterbacks, right? Right? Well, right now, the problem of too many quarterbacks is quickly turning into a problem of not any quarterbacks. And by that, I mean like zero quarterbacks. Like I said, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be gone. I don't think they have any interest in bringing him back. I think he will fetch some kind of price on the open market. So he was on a one-year deal. Fine. Jimmy G's gone. Okay, cool. Well, you still have two other quarterbacks. Well, it seems that Trey Lance, who suffered that broken ankle clear back in September, he had surgery on it. But then he had to undergo a second surgery in December because his ankle wasn't healing correctly. That doesn't sound very good to me, especially for an athletic guy who is going to rely a little bit on his wheels. You kind of need those wheels to be in good shape, right? Okay, but he still got Brock Purdy. He had that elbow injury that he had against the Eagles, but big deal. He'll be back. Well, now they are saying that Brock Purdy's elbow, which was injured back in January, is still so swollen that they can't even perform the surgery yet. They say they are hoping to do what they are labeling an elbow reconstruction this month in March. Why in the world is Brock Purdy's elbow still swollen? Does this concern anybody else? Because there are guys that have overdosed on Viagra and their swelling has reduced faster than Brock Purdy's elbow right now. Hey, the Niners have to be considered one of the favorites going into next season. But if they don't get a healthy quarterback back real soon, there are going to be some questions about that franchise and about that team. I don't know that you can win without one of your quarterbacks. And it looks like both of them have pretty significant injuries. Moving over to the world of college football, high-ranking college football leaders have been reviewing four specific changes to change the rules concerning the clock in college football. Now, two of those, they say, are pretty non-controversial, and they've gained some support. And the last one, it's pretty divided on how people are feeling about college football. We'll take a look at these. The non-controversial proposals include prohibiting consecutive timeouts. So you can't ice the kicker like twice. Okay, who cares? Icing the kicker right now to me is kind of dumb. Two, no longer would you extend a first or third quarter for an untimed down if the quarter would end on a defensive penalty. It would just roll into the next quarter. Okay, big deal. Those aren't that big of a change. Honestly, they wouldn't really change anything all that much anyways. So those aren't that significant. The third proposal that is gaining some support is that the clock would continue to run after the offense picks up a first down, except inside of 2 minutes remaining in the half, the end of the second quarter and at the end of the fourth quarter. And then a more controversial fourth proposal, the clock will continue to run after incomplete passes once the ball is spotted again for play. So the pass goes incomplete, ref comes in, sets the ball, and it winds, and you run. Now, we'll see if any of these get approved. I would doubt that all of them will get approved. And honestly, I've heard arguments on both sides of shortening college football games a little bit. Proponents say, hey, the games are too long. Do you realize the average college football game this past season was 3 hours and 21 minutes? I mean, come on. We're getting to like baseball territory there. But critics of these rules say, this is how college football's always been. Games are long. Get over it. Hey, I understand. Companies are buying ads. They want longer games because then they can put on more commercials. Just a thought. And again, I'm just a dumb guy from Broomfield, Colorado, but what if you sold half as many ads and charged double the price? Wouldn't that make more sense? I mean, if you sell 50 ads, instead of doing that, just sell 25. I don't know. Maybe that would just make way too much sense. Again, I'm just a dumb guy. But do these games really need to be over 3 hours? And you could say, yes, I don't mind them being over 3 hours. I'm watching, I don't know, Clemson versus Alabama. I don't mind a 3.5 hour game. Cool. I get it. Here's the thing from my perspective. I'm in Colorado. I can't watch this horrible product for more than 90 minutes. I am fully in favor of shortening these games a little bit. Running the clock after first downs, outside of the, you know, final 2 minutes of the halves, that makes total sense to me. I have no problem with that. Changing the consecutive timeouts, and extending the quarters and that kind of stuff, those are easy. I don't know about that final one of the incomplete pass. I'm not sure about that one, but I think you do the first three and then you kind of see where this all ends up. Maybe you can ease into shortening the game a little bit before you go quite that dramatic. Staying in the college realm, the last year has not been very good for the Pac-12. The Pac-12 has really been decreasing in value in that time span. And it is looking more and more like the Pac-12 is on the verge of maybe even going extinct. The league is trying to hold on for dear life, but their commissioner, George Klyavkov, he had a huge job to do after we found out that USC and UCLA were both leaving to go to the Big Ten. And one of the biggest jobs that Klyavkov had to do was get some sort of a new deal for that Pac-12 network. That Pac-12 network has been a complete and utter disaster. To this day, if you have a provider like DirecTV, you can't even get the Pac-12 network. No wonder UCLA and USC want to go to the Big Ten. They want more money. Who doesn't? Remember, they're going to start competing in the Big Ten in 2024. So that significantly is crushing the Pac-12 right now in TV negotiations, especially after the Big Ten and SEC signed monster deals for their TV deals. Well, there has been rumors that maybe the Pac-12 would link up with a streaming service like Apple or maybe Amazon and form a deal there. But a tweet by CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd said that doesn't really look to be happening. Dennis Dodd wrote that the new Pac-12 TV deal may not be the projections originally contemplated, but they are hoping for a solid enough financial situation to still keep the conference together. That sounds really bad for the Pac-12 and for their future finances. The Big Ten is signing a huge deal. The SEC is signing a huge deal. And the Pac-12 is what? Picking up scraps? If that's the case, and they're going to get way less than what everyone was hoping for, there's no spinning that as it being good. Do not be surprised when the Big Ten reaches out and poaches a few more teams out of the Pac-12, and I'm expecting to hear that news soon, like within the next year. I think the Big Ten is basically going to absorb the good programs in the Pac-12. And then the Big 12 maybe will kind of take the crappy leftovers. You know, like Colorado. Yeah, it's not looking good for the Pac-12. One really big story last week in sports news that kind of came out and broke more just after our podcast last week was when Alabama men's basketball decided to keep freshman guard Brandon Miller on their active roster despite an ongoing investigation looking at his connection to a gun that ended up taking the life of a 23-year-old female back in January. Alabama announced that Tuscaloosa detectives revealed that Miller had received a text message from his former teammate Darius Miles directing him to provide a handgun that was later responsible for this female's murder. Now, Miles and another person, Michael Lynn Davis, have been charged with capital murder for fatally shooting this other person, a mother of one, I might add, after an altercation on the strip near Alabama's campus. And Alabama has said they are cooperating fully with the law, and based on the information that they have received, Brandon Miller is not considered a suspect in the case. He's a cooperating witness. So they were going to allow him to continue to play. Now, I hate to bring this up, but can you imagine this happening at like so many other schools? You have a guy that brought a murder weapon to someone else that did the murdering, and yet you're saying, hey, he hasn't really been charged with anything, so we're going to let him keep playing basketball for a university? That sounds crazy to me. And I know maybe there isn't really anything in place, but I would kind of think, let's sit him down. Let's let some things be sorted out, and then we'll kind of figure it out. It's kind of starting to feel like Alabama is looking at this and saying, hey, we are rolling. Our basketball program is rolling. We have a chance to win a title, but I don't know if we have a chance to win that title without Miller. So let's go ahead and overlook this connection to the murder weapon and let him continue to play. I don't know. This seems to be really, really insensitive to the whole plight, again, of a murder. Here's the crazier part. On Saturday, Alabama faced Arkansas. In his pregame little warm-up, you know how all these players go out and they have the little high five, and you do the high five, and maybe you touch feet, and you pat each other on the head, and you spin around a few times? Apparently, one of Miller's pregame rituals is he goes out with a teammate, he raises his hand, and the teammate pats him down, like for a weapon. He still did the routine on Saturday amid all this scrutiny. Hey, this is absolutely insane. Alabama says they're not going to do anything with Miller unless he is actually arrested, which seems kind of insane to me. I mean, I guess. I don't know. This just has a really, really ugly look about the whole thing. And I mean, I guess now I think about it, there are a number of programs that would do this. I mean, we think of Nebraska, think of like Florida State. Think of USC. You know what? Never mind. This is just par for the course. This is just kind of how things go. I'm just going to need someone to please convince me that if Brandon Miller was averaging 3 points instead of 20 points, he would still be on the team. Yeah, I have my doubts about that. Finally, another NBA All-Star Weekend is in the books, and another dismal showing in television ratings has occurred. The ratings are in for last week's 2023 NBA All-Star Game. And I'll just say this. Yikes. It's not good. The news was terrible. According to figures published by Sports Media Watch, the NBA All-Star Game on Sunday averaged a combined 2.2 rating and only 4.59 million viewers. Hey, that is a significant decline, even from 2022. It had a 3.1 rating and 6.2 million viewers. 2023's ratings dropped 29% from 2022. Viewership dropped 27%. Hey, the NBA can keep telling us things are fine. This league has never been better. We had more people watching this year than back in 1970. Yeah, I get it. Whatever. There's more people on the planet. Of course you had more viewers. And yet, this league is in serious trouble. They have made some crucial errors. They have gotten in bed with politics. They have allowed their players to not play on most nights. You have too many games. You have guys faking injuries. You have nonsense refereeing. You have a number of problems right now going on in the NBA. And I'll be very, very honest. Adam Silver might be the worst commissioner in all major sports. Think about this. Think about where the NBA was back in 97, 98, 99 with Michael Jordan. And think of where it is now. It is not even close. David Stern had figured out a way to get all eyes on the NBA worldwide. Think about that in these days. There are a lot of people that would rather watch European basketball than would watch the NBA. There are more people starting to turn to other sports like the NHL, like even back to Major League Baseball. Back in the late 90s, I would have never dreamed that would ever happen. But here we are, and it's getting worse all the time. The NBA can tell us things are fine. They had better figure out some answers real, real fast. Okay, coming back, we have a lot to get to today. When we return, We are going to be looking briefly at some important dates in the NFL, and they're coming really fast. In fact, one of them is already here. And then we are going to start previewing March Madness by discussing some big name programs that could be left out of the NCAA tournament this year if they don't figure things out real, real fast. Okay, so we all know the NFL, it's a fall sport, right? I mean, football is a fall sport. You play in the fall. When the leaves start to change, you play football. It goes into the winter a little bit. It's going a little bit further and further. But it is a fall and winter sport. And yet, that league has managed to turn itself into a year-round news-creating powerhouse. Why? Because we know that every single offseason, certain teams are going to make very important moves, whether it is a new head coach or a new free agent signing. Maybe they're going to let someone leave in free agency. Maybe they're going to get a new draft pick. Maybe a team's going to lose a draft pick, lose a free agent, lose a coach. And teams get transformed in these off seasons to go from pretender to contender because there's so much parity in the NFL. Think about how many teams every single year down the stretch, right at the end, still have a chance to make the playoffs. There's always like 7-8 teams on each conference trying to make that push into the playoffs. It is so close. The margin for error is so slim that when we get to the offseason, hey, if you find that free agent or you find that draft pick or you get that head coach, whatever it may be, you might catapult your team up into that winning vicinity again. So with that in mind, what are the dates to remember when some of these changes could be taking place? Well, you might not realize it, but some of them are actually already here. Let's jump into a few important NFL dates to keep in mind this offseason, and they are going to be here before we know it. Now, starting last week on February 21st, it was the first day that you could designate your franchise or transition players. This starting date, it doesn't get a whole lot of action because the deadline to name those franchise or transition players isn't until next week. But I guarantee these players are in discussions with their teams right now. They're trying to get a contract hammered out. We're not hearing any news because there aren't any contracts actually getting done. But we could hear some news very, very shortly. And by shortly, I mean next week. Starting yesterday, February 28th, the NFL Scouting Combine began in Indianapolis. Yes. The infamous Underwear Olympics, where NFL teams will watch mostly meaningless drills, and they'll give mental aptitude tests on potential players that are looking for work coming out of college. The physical tests, when you watch a lot of them, they have nothing to do with actually playing NFL football. You have film on these guys. You saw them play the actual game. I don't need to see how high you can jump. I don't need to see how quick you can, box a kangaroo or whatever. Just watch the film. Watch these guys play football. If you want to give them some tests, you want to see where they are as a person, you want to talk to them, get to know them, you want to measure them, check them for injuries, I get that. But a lot of the drills, they're just dumb. They have nothing to do with playing real live football. And then the mental tests they give them, forget talking to a kid, getting to know them, what motivates you, why do you want to be in the league? Do you have a desire to become a great player? Some of the mental tests they give them are so dumb. Are you a cat person or a dog person? Some of them are demeaning. Some of them are even insulting. We've had some terrible things asked on these. Oh, and then don't forget in the NFL Combine that we'll also probably have ESPN insult multiple generations of minorities by somehow comparing this process of evaluating future millionaires to slavery. It's quite a bridge to get across there. And yet, many people do tune in and watch these goofy workouts. They're on the NFL Network. You could tune in and watch these people, run their 40s and their shuttle times and trying to catch a ball fired from a cannon or whatever. Fortunately, the good thing about the NFL Combine is every once in a while, we do get a clip of like somebody falling down, their pants fall off or something. And that makes us all smile a little bit. But other than that, the Scouting Combine to me isn't a whole lot to watch. But the NFL Scouting Combine started yesterday and it runs until March 6th. Now, next week, on Tuesday, that will be the deadline for those franchise and transition tags to be placed on players. Now, just for reference, last year, there were 8 players that were given the franchise tag. Of those 8, 4 of them ended up signing long-term deals. Now, if you don't understand the franchise tag, it is kind of odd. What it basically is you have a free agent that is due a new contract. You can't come to terms with the deal, so what you do is you pay what the NFL deems is a good amount for his position for one more year. And that gives you one more year to keep him and try to work out a long-term deal. Last year, 4 teams got deals done. 4 teams did not. Here are some of the players that we could see get the franchise tag this year. Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. The New York Giants have a couple big names. Quarterback Daniel Jones and running back Saquon Barkley. Will one of them get the franchise tag? Buffalo Bills safety Jordan Poyer. Las Vegas Raiders running back Josh Jacobs. And Kansas City Chiefs offensive tackle Orlando Brown. Hey, those are some pretty big names that could be very impactful whether or not they get that franchise tag or not. Also next Tuesday, college pro days begin. Now, college pro days, honestly, they are such a huge waste of time. And if you don't know what those are, what they are is college kids go out in usually their home college stadium or maybe on their high school field or whatever, and they pretend to play football, like against no one. So if you're a quarterback, you go out and you throw some passes around the empty stadium. Maybe you bring in some buddies to catch the ball, and you're hoping to impress NFL scouts. I'll be honest. I am not sure why this ever became a thing, but it has. And as soon as I hear someone say, you know, so-and-so had a really good pro day, my first thought is so-and-so probably sucks. I know maybe that's not fair, but that really is the first thought I have. Hey, so-and-so went out and threw some really great passes against an old coach waving a broom in his face. Yeah, I don't care. I'm going to look at your film. Did you play well in big games? Did you play well after undergoing some adversity? I want to study those things, not what you did in an empty stadium with no fans, with no pressure, with no nothing. Pro days are dumb. I don't even know why they exist. On March 13th, teams may begin negotiating with their unrestricted free agents in hopes of getting a deal done by March 15th. Because on March 15th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, hey, that's just 2 weeks from today, free agents can be signed or cut or traded. Now, we mentioned some of those players earlier that could get the franchise tag. If they don't, they could end up here. But we also have players like Seahawks quarterback Geno Smith, Eagles defensive lineman Javon Hargrave, Bengals safety Jesse Bates, Buccaneers linebacker Lavonte David, 49ers offensive tackle Mike McGlinchey. That's just a few of the players that could be switching teams if they don't get a deal done. And teams may also make qualifying offers to their restricted free agents on this date as well. March 15th, 2 weeks from today. Yeah, things are going to get real interesting. Because I know they say, on March 15th, you can get those deals done. And yet, we'll see someone sign a deal at like 4:01 Eastern Standard Time. You're telling me they got a deal done in 30 seconds? No, they're working on them right now. From March 26th to March 29th, we will have the annual NFL League Owner Meetings. But this year, they're actually going to be held in Phoenix, Arizona, instead of down in Florida, where they usually are. So maybe, I don't know, we won't have as many happy ending massage parlor trips. I don't know. Anyways, this is where the league owners will sit in stuffy boardrooms, smoking cigars, lighting them with $100 bills, and coming up with dumb ideas on how to fix usually pretty meaningless problems while not actually fixing anything important. So, will they speed up instant replay? No. Will they improve the officiating? Doubtful. Will they actually make the game safer? I can't really see it happening. But they probably will manage to muddle up some rules. They won't make any clear sense by the time they're done with them. They'll do something that helps nobody. Like, hey, you can wear pink if you're a player in October, but we're not actually going to donate any money to cancer research. We're just going to let you wear pink to remind the people in the stands and at home to donate money. We're not going to donate any money ourselves. Hey, it's how the rich stay rich. Those league meetings will begin March 26th. On April 3rd, teams with new head coaches can begin their offseason conditioning programs. Remember, we have five NFL teams this year that have brand new head coaches. Those are the Arizona Cardinals with Jonathan Gannon, the Carolina Panthers with Frank Reich, the Denver Broncos with Sean Payton, the Houston Texans with D'Amico Ryans, and the Indianapolis Colts with Steve Striken. They can start their conditioning programs on April 3rd. Then, 2 weeks later, the rest of the teams that still have their same head coaches, they can go ahead and get their conditioning programs going as well. Friday, April 21st, will be the deadline for restricted free agents to sign their offer sheets. We said, you know, when free agency starts, you can actually begin signing your restricted free agents. This is the day you have to have them done by April 21st. Now, if I'm being honest, there are not a ton of big name restricted free agents this year. So probably not a ton to watch there, but we'll see who ends up getting signed. And then Thursday, April 27th through Saturday, April 29th, we will have the NFL draft being held this year in Kansas City, Missouri. Remember, the Chicago Bears have the top pick, but they don't necessarily need a quarterback. So could we see a lot of movement on draft night? Yeah, I absolutely think we could. Ohio State quarterback C.J. Stroud, Alabama quarterback Bryce Young, Alabama linebacker Will Anderson, Georgia defensive lineman Jalen Carter, and USC wide receiver Jordan Addison should be among the top picks. And while I won't actually be participating in the NFL draft this year, I will be watching the draft on TV, much like my Denver Broncos will be doing, because they don't really get to do much of anything this year in the draft, because they've given all their picks away. May 1st will be the deadline for NFL teams to pick up their fifth-year options from the 2020 draft class. Now, again, sometimes these things are kind of confusing. You hear them thrown around on the sports networks or on talk radio, but you're like, I don't even know what that means. If you don't understand what it means, and honestly, why should you? All drafted rookies are given four-year contracts to begin their careers, and teams have the option to extend that contract to a fifth year with players that were selected in the first round. Now, you think back to that 2020 class. There's some big, big names. You think about Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow. Yeah, his option's getting picked up. Commanders defensive lineman Chase Young. Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. Might be interesting. Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert. Cowboys wide receiver CeeDee Lamb. Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson. Those guys are most likely all getting that option picked up. I guess Tagovailoa might be a little questionable. But others like Cardinals linebacker Isaiah Simmons, Panthers cornerback C.J. Henderson, that might be a little tougher of a decision. May 1st is the deadline for teams to pick up those fifth-year options. Then, May 5th or May 12th, teams may host their annual rookie minicamps, followed by OTAs and mandatory minicamps in May and June. And finally, in late July, NFL training camps will open. By the way, saying that out loud right now, man, does that seem like forever away. Late July? It's the first day of March right now. Got a long way to go. Especially when I stop right now and I think about the NBA playoffs and Major League Baseball, that's what's on our horizon. Okay, I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to worry about that because we know March Madness will be here. Then we're going to get into NHL and NBA playoffs. And yes, then it's going to be a little bit rough, but then it's going to be here before we know it. So I'm not going to complain. I'm going to stay in the moment and just wait. Late July, NFL training camps will be opening. And that, my friends, will be a glorious, glorious time of year. Okay, what we know that when football ends, we do have a tough time coping. Honestly, because our Sunday afternoons and our Monday nights, well, sometimes they're just empty and without meaning. However, March Madness Selection Sunday is now just a week and a half away. How is that possible? You know, we talked last week a little bit about teams that we believe are going to end up with those coveted number one seeds in the tournament. Today, I want to look at some teams kind of at the other end. You know, a couple of years ago, on the opening day of the tournament, I was down in Mexico. And I knew the tournament was starting, so I'm out at the pool, having a drink, enjoying the time in the sun. And I got up to go check scores Games are getting ready to start. I walked into the bar at the resort. I get a drink, and I look up to see the game's beginning, and some guy sees me. And he's like, hey, you a March Madness fan? I go, yeah, love College Hoops. He goes, oh, who do you have in the tournament? And so this was like 2 years ago. So I'm talking about like Gonzaga. Maybe I think Arkansas was a favorite. Baylor ended up winning the whole thing. And I asked him, who did you pick? And he was like, I don't know. I guess I just would pick Kentucky or Duke. And then I informed him that that year, neither Kentucky nor Duke had even made the tournament. He was kind of embarrassed. And I'm just letting you all know, don't be that guy. Now this year, there are some legitimate blue blood programs that could be left out of the tournament completely if they don't figure things out real, real quick. And I mean like now, like this week, like today, they have got to get some things figured out, or I'm calling it, they're not going to make the dance. And again, I'm not talking about those little tiny programs, mid-majors. No, no, no. I'm talking about big name programs that could be left at home or doing even worse, going to the NIT that nobody really actually wants to go to. Today, we're going to discuss some teams that are on the bubble. They had better really pick it up if they want to make the big dance. Now, when we get into this, there are teams out there like Syracuse this year, Notre Dame, Florida. I'm not putting those teams on the bubble. I'm saying those teams are out. They'd have to like win their conference tournament to make it. Those aren't the teams I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the teams that have little to no chance. I am talking today about teams that have a chance, but they need to make a run, and they need to make it real, real quick. Let's start off with a team that got a big win over the weekend, but the North Carolina Tar Heels had better keep winning, or I'll call it right now, they're not going to make the field. The Tar Heels have losses this year to Iowa State, who was unranked at the time, Virginia Tech, Pitt, who they lost to twice, and Wake Forest. Now, like I said, over the weekend, the Tar Heels managed to beat number 6 Virginia on Saturday. But they need to close out the year with wins over both Florida State and probably over Duke, or they need to make some real big noise in the ACC tournament. That is absolutely crazy for a team that went all the way to the title game last year and returned most everyone. Now, we said at the beginning of the year, we really like the Tar Heels, but depth could be a problem, and it has been. They don't have any depth on that team. Once they go to the bench, the play really drops off. And, you know, North Carolina isn't playing very good defense this year, and they aren't consistent enough scoring the ball to get away with those poor defensive nights. Hey, North Carolina, bizarrely, could be in some big trouble this year. Now, also going into the season, we all believed that the Pac-12 was going to be pretty top-heavy. They had UCLA, they had Arizona, they had USC being very, very good, and then the rest of the league maybe being just a little better than average and average. That is not exactly how this season has gone for the Pac-12. Yes, Arizona and UCLA, they've been good, very good. In fact, they're probably both going to be number 2 seeds in the dance. There's even a chance that one or both could move up to a number 1. But the rest of the league in the Pac-12, they have not been very good. Oregon is probably going to be out. Arizona State, they're going to have to rally. They're going to get in. And while I would probably think that the University of Southern California would scrape their way in, just barely, like get one of those 11 seeds where you got to do the playing game and all, if they lose much more in their final games, or if they don't show well in the Pac-12 tournament, I think the Trojans could end up having their bubble popped. Now, USC has struggled to win games on the road this year. And when those games are on the road against top talent, then they've really been bad. This year, USC has lost at Washington State. They were smoked by Arizona by 30 and at Oregon by 28. Now, they host number 7 Arizona tomorrow. They need to show well, or again, USC is going to be in some trouble of completely missing the NCAA tournament this year. Okay, coming back, we have a few more teams that need to close out the season very strong, but they're going to be home with all of us watching March Madness on TV too. And then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. today we are talking about some blue blood programs that we would kind of be surprised if they don't make the big dance. Well, today our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to be looking at some schools that would actually kind of shock us if they did make the tournament. So let's continue our look at some surprising teams that are now finding themselves on the NCAA tournament bubble when we all kind of just expected these teams to get in. Like, they're going to be in the tournament. They should get in the tournament. They have the talent. And yet right now, I'm not so sure. Remember back in 2018 when the Memphis Tigers hired Penny Hardaway to coach their program? And when he got the job, we heard all about his AAU connections, how he was basically going to be dominant from the beginning because of the number of recruits that he was going to land. And I remember even saying it then, hey, that's great. You're going to get a lot of great high school kids. But remember, you're going to have to coach against some really good coaches. And I'm not saying Penny can't coach, but you don't have the experience some of these guys have. You haven't been coaching for 20, 30, 40 years like some of these guys have. You're going to have a growing curve. And it's going to take you a little while. So we heard all about the great recruits he's going to get, and he's going to be immediately successful. Well, in his 5 seasons with the Memphis Tigers, Penny Hardaway has been to just 1 NCAA tournament. And the Memphis Tigers have won exactly 1 tournament game in that time. They were knocked out after that. And this year, it's going to be tied again. Hey, Memphis has a 22-7 record. That sounds pretty good, right? They've won a lot of games. They've only lost 7. They should get in, except that 5 of those losses are to unranked teams. Memphis this year was swept by Tulane. How? They lost to Central Florida. They lost to St. Louis. Their overall strength of schedule comes in at number 60 in the country. That's not great. And granted, the Tigers have been playing better lately, but they really need to close the season by making some noise in that American Athletic Conference, or they're going to risk being left out because their strength of schedule just isn't that strong. If you just look at resumes, you're going to say, well, this team played top competition. This one didn't. Yeah, they got a good record, but who cares? You've got to actually beat some of those bad teams. Memphis has struggled at times doing that. We'll see if the Memphis Tigers get in. Now, I believe personally, and I've told you this before on the Dose, that this year, the Big 12, to me, is the best conference in college basketball. You've got Kansas. You've got Baylor. You've got Texas, Texas Christian, Kansas State, Iowa State. They are all most likely going to be locks to make the tournament. However, Oklahoma State, who you might keep in mind, missed last year's tournament. Yeah, they're in some trouble again this year. The Cowboys really struggle to just consistently score points night in, night out. And they struggle to get stops when they absolutely have to. And as a result, Oklahoma State is in some trouble. Now, Okie State did manage to sweep their rival, the Oklahoma Sooners. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean much this year because Oklahoma basketball, not doing so great in general. However, Oklahoma State has been losing big games down the stretch because, like I said, they just can't generate enough points. And the tough part for Oklahoma State is that conference tournament where you need to make some noise, you need to win some games, it is going to be brutal. So when you need to go out and win big games, you're facing some of the top teams in the country. Good luck. I'm not sure Oklahoma State is going to make the big dance. I think they may be sitting at home watching with us. We go next down south to SEC country. That has also been pretty good this year. SEC basketball has improved quite a bit. Think about it. Alabama, Tennessee, those are both top 10 teams. Kentucky is getting hotter. Probably Texas A&M. Those 4 teams are all probably getting in. Very, very solid candidates to make the field. But the Auburn Tigers have gone to 3 tournaments now under head coach Bruce Pearl, and they might be missing the big dance this year. After they started the season ranked number 15, they started off the year 8-0 this year. But now, the Auburn Tigers have lost 10 of their last 19 games including, again, some bad losses. Because Auburn has 8 losses to unranked teams. They got blasted by 30 over the weekend to Kentucky, who is suddenly hot, I might add. And tonight, Auburn will be facing most likely number 1 seed Alabama. You know those two schools hate each other. And you know Alabama would love nothing more than to put their foot on Auburn's neck and stomp on it. Now, Auburn's strength of schedule is actually pretty solid. They've played a number of ranked teams. Here's the problem for Auburn. Does it matter if you lose to all those teams? I would think not. I think Auburn is in some real danger of missing out on the NCAA tournament. We finish out our list of big-name programs that are going to struggle to make the 68-team field. And by the way, brief side note, if you're a major conference, if you are in, you know, the Big Five, or even like kind of those mid-major kind of conferences, where you get to play ranked opponents pretty consistently, and you can't make the NCAA tournament, I have no pity for you whatsoever. Win some games, you get in. Imagine back in the day when only like 16 total teams got in. If you were to bring those coaches and players up now and say, hey, I know you were number 17, so you didn't get in. Now, number 70 is complaining about not getting in. I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of pity from any of those people. 68 teams get in. You can find a way. Anyways, our final team is one of those programs that if they did get in, maybe they would end up being dangerous. But I'll say right now, time is running out on the Michigan State Spartans. The Spartans are now just hoping to qualify. And their loss this past Saturday, yeah, it's not going to help. Michigan State was up by 13 on Iowa with just a minute and 34 seconds left to play. They managed to lose in overtime to the Iowa Hawkeyes. Now, we all know head coach Tom Izzo. He's among the best in the business. He is among the best ever. But we always expect Michigan State to just dominate with their defense. That defense has been real inconsistent this year. They should be able to finish the regular season on a winning streak. They have a couple of softer opponents next up. But then they need to make some noise in that Big Ten tournament, or Michigan State could be sitting at home as well. Who would have thought that? You know, March Madness is going to be here in just 2 weeks. And when you are filling out those all-important brackets, we all want to win that office pool, you might want to keep some of these big-name teams in mind, because it might just be used to entering some of these teams on the winning line. You might want to be a little more cautious this year, though, because some of these teams may not even make the show. Now, having said that, we do know one thing. The committee can say, we just compared resume to resume. We know they're lying. We know they love their brand names, and they love to make those matchups with their brand names. So if it comes down to one of the small schools, one of those, you know, lesser known schools getting in, or a Michigan State or a North Carolina, we know the committee is probably going to go with that bigger name, but it's going to be very, very interesting to see if these teams we talked about today can play their way into the big dance, because that is what you are judged on now. You got to get there, or you're going to be sitting at home going to the NIT and worried about your job very, very soon. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get to our Daily Dose top 5. So today on the Dose, we have been talking about blue blood programs. Programs from major conferences that we are just used to see make the NCAA tournament every single year. I mean, you figure that the University of North Carolina has the most number one seeds in tournament history, and yet this year, they're in some serious trouble as to whether they'll even make it to the dance. Well, today, we're not talking about those great programs in our Daily Dose top 5. No, we are talking about the other end of the spectrum, the teams that don't make the tournament, like in forever. Today, our Daily Dose top 5 is counting down the top 5 longest current NCAA tournament droughts that are out there. Which teams have not made the field in the longest amount of time. And we're also going to talk a little about, do they have a shot of breaking that drought this year? Okay, so we start off at number five. Where we go clear back to the year 1969. Yes, I'm talking about the same year that we landed on the moon.
No way. That's great.
We landed on the moon!
This is the year that Tom Little and Lou West and Sam Pierce led the Seattle Redhawks to the NCAA tournament. The Redhawks went 20-8 that year as an independent program, and they faced Weber State, who actually shot the lights out in the first round, and they beat Seattle 75-73. Now, back in 1969, the UCLA Bruins would beat Purdue in the title game that year. You might remember UCLA had a guy by the name of Lou Alcindor, who later would change his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But since 1969, the University of Seattle has gone 54 seasons without making the tournament again. To be fair, 29 of those seasons were not at the D1 level, but they are back at the D1 level now. Now, believe it or not, the Redhawks, they have a chance of making the tournament this year. Seattle now plays in the WAC, and the WAC is actually maybe better than people think. They have Utah Valley. I'm telling you right now, Utah Valley is pretty tough this year. They have Stephen F. Austin. We've seen them make some noise in the tournament over the last few seasons. And they have Sam Houston. Now, I would say Seattle probably needs to show very strong in the WAC tournament. But if they did, maybe, just maybe, Seattle could break that drought this year. But coming in at number five, we have the Seattle Redhawks, who have a 54-year drought on making the NCAA tournament. We move on to number four. And we go to a program, okay, that basically has no shot whatsoever this year because the Bowling Green Falcons are currently 11th out of the 12 teams in the Mid-American Conference. But I mean, honestly, Bowling Green's probably used to it because the Falcons, they haven't made the NCAA tournament since 1968. Again, back in 68, UCLA also won the tournament with Alcindor. And of course, with legendary head coach John Wooden, but Bowling Green actually made the dance. They were coached by a guy you've probably heard of. The great Bill Fitch coached Bowling Green that year. The Falcons had big man Walt Piekowski, who averaged 24 points and 7 rebounds per game, but Bowling Green was knocked out by Marquette in a very, very tight game. Of course, Piekowski would go on to the NBA, play a little bit there, but you might actually remember his son, Eric Piekowski. He played for the Clippers for a number of years, and of course we know Bill Fitch would go on to lead the Boston Celtics to an NBA title. But currently, Bowling Green has a 55-year streak going where they have not made the tournament, and that ties them, actually, with our next team. We're going to put Bowling Green at number four, and we're going to put our next team at number three. Bowling Green comes in today at number four. So next up at number three, we go back once again to the year 1968. Think about 1968, how long ago that actually was. Woodstock had not yet taken place. The Vietnam War was rolling. And Super Bowl II had just been played back in January. But also taking place in 1968, in addition to Bowling Green making the 23-team tournament at the time, was the Columbia Lions making the tournament. The Lions had future NBA star Jim McMillan on their roster. McMillan averaged 22-10 for the season. But get this, Columbia didn't just make the tournament. First, they beat LaSalle by almost 20. Then they beat Davidson in overtime by 2 before they finally bowed out to St. Bonaventure in the regional semifinal. I mean, that's a pretty good run for a team that hasn't been back since, but Columbia went pretty deep in the tournament since then. Yes, it has been 55 years, and Columbia really hasn't been all that close. This season, they are sitting dead last in the Ivy League. So yeah, it's pretty likely that that Columbia streak is going to continue. The Columbia Lions come in today at number 3. Coming in at number 2, we arrive at a team that again has a very slim chance to break their streak this year. If they do, it's going to take quite a doing because it's going to be very, very tough. They have a lot of history to break if they're going to do it, because it has been 60 years since the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles made it to the NCAA tournament. We go clear back to the year 1963. 63. You know, back when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Yeah, that same year, the Loyola Chicago Ramblers won the NCAA tournament over the Cincinnati Bearcats. Here's the unfortunate part for Tennessee Tech. Tennessee Tech made some history in the tournament that year. And I'll be honest, it wasn't the good kind. In the opening round, Tennessee Tech faced eventual champion Loyola Chicago. And in that opening game, they were beaten by Loyola Chicago 111-42. That is a record 69-point difference. Yeah, I said 69.
Oh, no, you didn't.
That still stands to this day. No one's ever lost by 69 or more, even now. Now, these days, Tennessee Tech plays in the Ohio Valley, where they currently sit in second place behind top team Morehead State. Here's the bad news. Tech's overall record, it's right around 500. So they might be in second place. They probably don't have much of a chance to get in, though. I don't expect the streak to be broken. But hey, go win your league tournament. Break that 60-year drought. Tennessee Tech comes in today on our list at number 2. So we reach the number 1 team that has the longest current drought in making the NCAA tournament. And again, we go back to the Ivy League, where we are reminded that hippies, even rich hippies sometimes, are rarely great at playing sports. Sorry to break that. Because for our number 1 entry, we go back to the year 1959.
Are you kidding me?
No, seriously. 1959. The Barbie doll was debuting in the United States. Dwight D. Eisenhower was in office, and the Super Bowl did not yet exist, and the Dartmouth Big Green actually made the NCAA tournament. Now, the Cal Berkeley Bears, behind coaching great Pete Newell, they scraped past West Virginia and Jerry West 71-70 in what they say was a great game, but Dartmouth had a double-double monster in a forward by the name of Rudy LaRusso. Sounds like a guy straight out of, you know, Rudy, right? He averaged 19 points and 16 rebounds per game. The Big Green went 22-6, and in the first round of the tournament, they would face Jerry West and those West Virginia Mountaineers. And of course, West went for 25 points, and they sent Dartmouth home for the year. They haven't been back since. The Dartmouth Big Green currently hold the longest drought in the country for last making the big dance 64 years ago. And their current season is not making a strong case to break that drought anytime soon. Dartmouth sits in sixth place out of the 8 teams in the Ivy League. And we all know that league, they're just going to send one team to the tournament. So you'd have to win your conference tournament. Doesn't look like that is going to happen this year. I have a lot of doubts. Here's the crazy part. The longest drought ever for making the tournament was 66 seasons held by Harvard from 1946 to 2012. Don't look now, but at their current rate, Dartmouth is closing in on that record real fast. They are at 64, and it doesn't look like that is changing anytime soon. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are going to continue to get you ready for March Madness by taking a look at some teams that have a shot of wearing Cinderella's slipper this year. Yes, we will have some teams that just might be bracket busters this year. You better make sure and tune in, because it just might help you fill out those all important brackets this year. Plus, you know, we'll be keeping you up on all that is going on in the world of sports. So be sure that you stop by and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the articles, for sharing the videos with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
No way.